stories don't define you. How you tell them will.
Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief storymaker at Elkins Consulting. In my work with coaching clients, I guide people to improve their communication using storytelling as the foundation of our work together. What I've realized over years of coaching and podcasting is that the majority of people don't realize the impact of the stories they share on their internal messages and on the people they're sharing them with. What really lights me up is guiding executives in uncovering the stories in their lives that are meaningful. The stories that, when shared with the right audience in the right way, connect, inspire, and motivate. Here's what a former client had to say about our work together. As a leader of leaders, I struggle with how and when to use my stories to emphasize the points my audience is looking for. It's a delicate balance between sounding like I'm bragging and delivering a message that needs to be heard. Sarah's approach to storytelling clears that obstacle so that you can deliver a clear and concise message using your stories to emphasize your points. It's truly amazing when it all comes together. Greg McDonough, Blackburn Capital Advisors, and president of the Entrepreneurs Organization of Washington, D.C. Visit ElkinsConsulting.com to learn more about working with me. Today, I am so pleased to highlight the work and stories of my friend Lisa Rangel. I met her as an introduction from my friend Sabrina Woods, who I interviewed probably about a year ago on this podcast. She's a career coach and counselor. And Lisa is kind of the counterpart to that. She does resume work and also some career coaching. So I'm so pleased to have you on this podcast because I know just from our brief conversation last month that your insights are going to be useful and inspiring to our listeners. So thanks for joining me, Lisa.
Thank you for the invitation. I was so excited when you asked. So, and I'm thrilled Sabrina put us together. It's been great.
Yes. So I always start my conversations with asking you to share something about yourself that most people don't know. And the reason I do that is I like for our listeners to get a little bit of an insight, some context for what we're going to be talking about, diving into those stories. So do you have something maybe that you can share?
One thing that always comes to mind when I've asked something to that nature or effect is most people think I'm naturally extroverted because I don't have a problem chatting, with people. I can put people at ease when I have conversations with them typically. And I can speak even on the fly, publicly without really many issues or many hiccups, thankfully, right? But I grew up as a painfully shy, introverted person. And all through high school and in college, like crazy self-conscious, always not wanting to be noticed, kind of wanting to be, like a fly on the wall, despite, being in sometimes leadership roles or front-facing roles. Like I just found myself wanting to cower in a corner many days. And, it really wasn't until my mid to late 20s that I started to realize if I didn't learn how to sell myself, I somehow had this epiphany that I'd probably wind up being frustrated the rest of my life, waiting for people to recognize me. I don't even know where that came from. I don't come from a very corporate, background family or, very, blue collar worker or government worker type people that, go in and do their jobs. And I don't know, but somehow I felt if I didn't learn how to promote myself, I would probably end up being frustrated. So in my 20s, I forced myself to take a sales job.
Ooh. And that was a challenge.
Yeah, I forced myself to take an executive recruiting or recruiting job in Wall Street, sitting in a bank of desks, one of many people sitting at a bank of desks in one big room, and everybody's smiling and dialing and emailing, and and everyone was really like extroverted and salesy, and You know, I thought I was the biggest cheese bucket on the planet selling. And there were some days I like would run to the bathroom and cry. And so, you know, I've just learned over time, like how to embrace who I am. Like I am not this natural extrovert. But I am introverted. I'm logical. I'm, you know, precise in my approach. And instead of trying to be an extrovert, like some of my colleagues were at the time, that sales happened to them somewhat naturally, schmoozy, you know, that sort of thing. Like for me, I appealed to the other introverts, the other introverted decision makers who needed logic and a case presented and that sort of thing. So I came to appreciate how I did it instead of trying to be like other people doing it. And while maybe adopting some of their tactics as well, but in a way that I still felt authentic. So, so I feel like there's always hope for introverts selling themselves or something.
I think that's fantastic. And I especially like this idea that you in your 20s realized that you were going to be frustrated. I mean, to use that language, I've heard people say, you know, I knew I wanted more, or I knew I had to do something so that I could move up in my work or whatever. But I've never heard somebody specifically use the phrase, I knew I would be frustrated in my future. And that's really insightful, I think, for a lot of introverts that are facing that, no matter what age they are. Mm-hmm. They could be in their 50s. My friend Joe Kwan talks a lot about executive presence. And I think that that's exactly what you described, your ability to embrace who you were and use that as a tool, mm-hmm. while also being open to maybe looking at other things that other people were doing and adjusting them to match your style and mm-hmm. to feel authentic and right for you. That's awesome.
No, I appreciate that. I never had anybody point out the frustrated line being interesting or different, but yeah, that's what it was. I mean, I just, you know, I think it was about like 27, 28 when I took that recruiting job. Prior to that, I was a hotel school major, and I worked in high-end hotels in the food and beverage side of things for about 4 years after college. And, you know, I was a worker bee. I was, you know, a people pleaser. I like just did all the things in front of me that I had to do, and I would do them really well, and, you know, work 12, 14 hour days like most people did in the restaurant hospitality business. And, you know, and I quickly noticed, maybe not so quickly if it took 4 years, but I noticed that like you know, people didn't necessarily get promoted because they did the work well. You know, and you know, call that silly, but, and, you know, so, but yet I wasn't a schmoozer, you know, like I was a people pleaser, but not a schmoozer. They are very different, right?
Oh, so, yeah, there's a distinction.
And so, you know, and I realized I had to get better at promoting myself accurately, you know, authentically, and in the way that I still felt comfortable doing. And I realized I was probably only going to be able to do that if I learned how to sew. I don't know why. I don't even still to this day know where that came from. I'm sure it was something I read or was taught, but I can't remember to give credit, or if it was a divine intervention, so be it. But, you know, I just remember like saying I should do that. And so I did, you know.
So tell me about that. When you applied for, did you apply for more than one job, or was this the one that you're like, okay, this is what I want?
When I worked, my last hospitality job was out at Pebble Beach in California. And I was moving back. My husband and I were moving back to New York, where I was from. And my boss at Pebble Beach, who I worshiped the ground she walked on, she was great. She was so influential to me. She said to me, you should be a recruiter. You'd be really good at it. I had no idea what a recruiter was, like zero. I just didn't even know what it was. But like, her name was Chloe. Chloe said to do this, so I'm going to go do that, you know. And so when I came back to, you know, New Jersey, New York area, I literally looked, because this was 20 years plus years ago, I literally looked in the paper and I answered ads in the New York Times for Headhunter. not even realizing that was, you know, not a great term to be to call a recruiter at the time, but they were advertising themselves that way, so I didn't know any better. And you know, I applied to a bunch of them, and I wound up getting a job with one of them. And I was a recruiter procuring candidates, and you know, I remember bringing candidates in, and a couple of sort of the really senior, to show you what I didn't even know what recruiting was at the time. Like, I was bringing people in thinking like, oh, I have to find all these people jobs. And I would bring these candidates to some of the senior people that were with the company a while. And I'd say, oh, we have this great person. We should find her job. And I remember like one of the saltier New York City, you know, battle axe-y kind of recruiters, like telling me like, you know, we don't find people jobs. We have to bring candidates to our clients who are paying us. And I was like, oh, okay. And that's really what a recruiter is. They bring qualified candidates to their paying company clients.
Right, so, of course.
You know, and she's like, we're not social workers. And I'm like, okay, scared of you. And and I, you know, and but I still was good at it. And then I, after about a year of doing it on the candidate side, I realized the client owners, for lack of a better way of putting it, the people who had the client companies with the jobs, you know, yielded more power in the office. So I wanted to be a client owner. But because the office I was in was so client heavy, client owner heavy, I left that company and wound up going to a new startup that was a Boston-based company that was starting up an office in New York. And I went to be someone who goes and gets the clients. And I remember when I gave notice, my boss was like, you won't be good at that. You're better at the recruiting. And I'm like, well, I'm leaving anyway. And if I'm bad at it, I'll figure it out soon enough. And, but you know, it was because I was so introverted and because I was a people pleaser and because I was social worker-y in nature that I think he was concerned about that. And, but I knew I could still be all that, but be a client owner too and put better matches together. And so I learned how to do it on the other side of it. And I was really good at it. But I did it in a way that was, you know, harnessed the introversion traits that I brought to the table. You know, mm-hmm. I was surrounded by people that were just naturally gregarious and, you know, really good after work schmoozers and all that type of stuff. And I just wasn't that person, but I did it in a way that was still worked for me. And
so can we go back a little bit? Because that comment from your boss or whoever at the recruitment company for Wall Street, he says, you won't be good at that job. And meanwhile, you have the juxtaposition, the contrast with Chloe, who said, oh, you'd make a great recruiter.
Right.
And I just want to point this out because I'm curious about the impact of those stories on you. So I understand through storytelling research, that actual research with evidence that's been going on about storytelling is that the narratives that people tell about you also impact your identity, particularly when you're younger. But also, you know, if you're influenced and you were clearly influenced, it can change your story. So here's Chloe saying, oh, you'd make a great recruiter. And what's interesting about that is that she saw something in you. Mm-hmm. She knew you had, I love this phrase, social worker-y.
You had this. I'm a resume writer who makes up words. It's usually not a good combination, but it works for me sometimes. But they're not, the made up words are not in the resume, I promise.
Well, but it's really descriptive to somebody who knows social workers and knows what it takes to go to school for that and to do it in the field. What it means to me is compassionate and a desire to serve people. I mean, that's what social worker E is. It's also somebody who's focused on equity and justice.
Right.
Right. And do you have consistency in your top strengths in StrengthsFinder?
You know, I haven't looked at that in a while. I can't remember.
We should probably look at that later.
That would be interesting. Yes.
But, it seems to me that social justice is something that was meaningful to you and maybe continues to be. And then you have this contradicting or not quite contradicting necessarily, because it is different business selling your services to a client to do recruitment as opposed to being a recruiter directly. But it still has the same idea that she's saying you'd be great at recruitment because it involves a form of sales, but it's selling people and their skills. And he was saying you'd be bad at client services because he didn't believe that you could do sales because of your introverted.
That's really what it was. Like, I didn't, it's funny because, and I have a few of those stories in my life where people said, oh, when I was making a transition to something new, like they actually said, like, I didn't think that was going to work, or I didn't think you'd be good at that, but sure, good luck, you know? And I never believed them. I can genuinely say I just didn't believe them. Like, I'm grateful that I didn't believe them. Right. I mean, cause that's not always the case. And, you know, and it's not like I've always been this, you know, like, I mean, I described myself in the beginning as this, like, you know, person who was kind of trying to be in the background and introverted. And, you know, it doesn't seem logical that that person would not believe, you know, someone in authority telling you, that may not work for you. But I don't know. I just didn't believe him.
But you believed Chloe.
I believed Chloe. I don't know. I mean, she was great, but I didn't not like my other, you know, bosses or authority people, but like, I just was like, oh yeah, you're entitled to have an opinion, but man, I gotta go do this. And they were wrong, you know? It happened to me when I started my business, the resume business too. I was going to partner with a recruiter friend of mine who was actually a mentor and taught me the recruitment business, another person. And in the end, right before we literally like LLC'd and rented space and all this other stuff, you know, I was like, I just got a vibe that this isn't going to work. And he's like, you know, well, I don't know about that resume thing. You know, I just figured we'd do it as a side thing for the recruiting business we would do together. And I was like,
oh,
I think this is a thing. I'm going to do this on my own then. And he's mad. He was mad at me and we haven't talked since. So, and you know, and our business is thankfully successful. So I think it speaks to when you believe in what you're doing, you know, even if you're not sure how it's going to come to fruition. And even if you have setbacks along the way, like you just got to keep moving, you know? You know, that's, I don't know how I'm getting to that point. I'm kind of rambling, but anyway, that's, you know, yeah, it is interesting how sometimes I believe Chloe and didn't believe the other people. I don't really get the
behind that, but I truly, and my sister and I just talked about this when I did a podcast with she and her boss, Adrian Kimball. And we talked about how the messenger is really important about whether you're going to believe, trust, and act on the message. And as much as you liked your other bosses, you saw Chloe not only as somebody in authority, but also somebody that you trusted and that you believed saw you. So I think anytime you have a messenger that you don't think really sees you and knows you, and you're not going to listen to them about you. It's the people who know you. And that's where some of the major damage can occur. And I'm just grateful that that didn't happen to you. But the damage occurs when you have somebody who you think knows you and then tells you an opposite story about yourself that, you know, you wouldn't be good at this because I remember this time that you did blah, 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 and they have all this baggage. So,
I don't think those people who told me that, I don't think the people who told me, you know, that may not work, I don't think they meant any harm. I thought there was nothing negative in my mind about it. It was just, we disagree, just to be clear. But,
I think it's important though. I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. I think it's important though, to think about why they would say something like that. It's not because they wanted to hurt you. It's because they care about you.
Yeah, they cared. And I do think there was something a little self-serving, you know, that if I stuck with what they were doing, it would be, you know, good for them too. But I also know that they cared and they didn't want to see me hurt either. So
exactly.
And it's totally fine. But you know, I remember reading in one of your, or hearing in one of the podcasts, earlier podcasts I listened to, that, you know, that Chloe's suggestion really like put me on the path for the rest of my life. If I wasn't a recruiter, I probably wouldn't have done the resume thing. Like it, literally it put me on a course that I would not have probably found on my own. Mm-hmm. Had she not done that, and had, who knew that that was a thing that was like such a directional moment in hindsight, you know? So, but yeah.
So let's go back to that then, because, I love to uncover these pivot points, which clearly, you know, now you look back at the time, right. Of course, you couldn't have known it was going to color your entire career going from a completely different industry, the hospitality industry, to recruitment and resume writing and all of that side of things, social worker E, which is the opposite of hospitality in some ways. When you think about Chloe and you think about when she told you that, was it when you gave your notice? Was it at the time when you handed her a letter, or do you remember specifically where that conversation
actually came? She had left before I left. So I gave notice to a different person. She had told me that, you know, we had kept in touch while she was gone until I left. That was the suggestion she gave me. So, you know,
so was that in person?
I want to say yes, if I remember it correctly. It's been a little while since I've actually thought of this. So yeah.
Yeah. So this is a story. This is why I love what I do, because this is a story that when you share it will inspire and influence others. It just will, because it was such a big shift in your life,
right.
and took you in such a completely different direction. And she's probably the one that when she said that, you thought, I do need to try this so that I don't get frustrated and disappointed in my career because I'm not out there doing my thing. Mm-hmm. So I would really encourage you to try to go back to that, like start uncovering little bits and pieces of the memory of that particular conversation.
Okay.
Just like when we talk about things, about very specific conversations that changed your life,
mm-hmm.
or that shifted your direction, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be an epic moment. Clearly.
No,
it wasn't an epic moment, right? But the meaning behind it is spectacular.
Right. It is pretty cool.
Yes, I'd encourage you to go back and kind of think about, maybe you were having coffee together. Maybe you met up after you gave your notice and you said, hey, I'm moving to New Jersey, New York.
Right.
And she said, oh, you should. I mean,
yeah,
really,
I wanted to try to do something outside of the hospitality business since I was getting a little burnout on it. And that's when she said, you'd be a great recruiter. And I was like, I don't even know what that is, but okay.
Oh, that's so
luckily
awesome.
She didn't tell me to like join a cult or anything, you know, because it was that mindset. I would have probably listened to whatever she told me to do. So I'm really grateful that it was actually like normal.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, in that kind of uncertainty.
In that impressionable phase with her. So
yeah. Wow. And so, here's the other side of it that I'm just like kind of tickled with, as I imagine this conversation going on. She had no idea.
Zero.
Like in that moment, she was just saying something that felt right.
Yeah,
she knew totally. You. She probably wasn't much older than you were. She's probably maybe 3 or 4 years older.
No, she was actually like 25, at least 25 to 30 years older than me.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So she was just trusting her instincts.
Yeah. She was amazing. She was amazing restaurateur. And I just trusted her. She knew her stuff. She was great.
Wow. And she has no idea to this day, because you lost touch, right?
We've lost touch. I've actually tried to find her and just to circle back, but I've had no success in that. But yeah. So
well, maybe she'll hear this.
Maybe she'll hear this.
And she'll be tickled with it too.
But yeah, so no, it was, you know, but it you bring up just sort of like how things, you had said earlier that, you know, hospitality and social work can be different. I mean, like they are and they aren't, you know, it's a service driven type function. And, you know, when I first got to college, I was an engineering major and I hated it immediately. And I transferred to the hotel school after my first semester because I hated engineering, but I didn't want to leave Cornell. Like, I was like, I'm graduating with a basket weaving degree. If I have to, I'm not leaving this place. So, and my roommate was a hotelie, and I had waited tables in high school. And so I was like, yeah, I can do that. I mean, like, you know, I've always just sort of like, oh yeah, I can do that. And, you know, so, you know, you would never think like the engineering minded, you know, recruiter, you know, a restaurateur recruiter, like, story makes sense. But I mean, to me, it really does. It's like that analytical, compassionate, you know, service, trying to make a good experience type of match person, right? Helping people find their match. Like, it all makes sense to me. And I think I'm exceptionally good at it. And I love it. And it's, you know, it's seeing where people, it's helping people honor their stories, but finding places that will honor their stories as well. Like, the, you know, to me, an employment match, a good employment match, it's both sides honoring the strengths and the weaknesses about them, right? Like, the weaknesses can't highlight the other weaknesses, right? The weaknesses exist of the company and of the candidate. And I think when those weaknesses complement each other or accentuate a strength instead of accentuating the weakness of the other, like, that's when it's a good match, you know? And there's like a degree of empathy that has to happen, and trying to train, coach, teach clients how to, one, honor their own story, strengths and weaknesses, but also acknowledge that there's going to be weaknesses in their target company. The key is to see if those are ones they can live with. Improve or complement, you know.
Exactly.
Then that's when you have a good match. You know, it's not a company rolling out a carpet for you, and it's not you rolling out the carpet or being a doormat for the company. It's about realizing that this is a merge of two entities that have baggage as well as strengths. And when those baggage and strengths complement each other, that's when you have a good match. And so I feel like the engineering, the hospitality, the recruiting, it all kind of makes sense as to how that all comes to be.
Well, I would love to kind of reiterate that for our listeners, that just because a career trajectory looks contradictory or really significantly different from one to the next, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you can't bring your own strengths and talents to every one of them.
And oh, absolutely.
I just actually reshared an old episode of my podcast with Tom Bohm because it was about finding satisfaction wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And that was about exactly what you just said. Your engineering brain was spinning at that point, that when you can find something where you can really use your strengths while still embracing those weaknesses and complementing whatever organization you're with, or, you know, the opposite is also true, that you can be satisfied wherever you are.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of people, and I've done this myself, so I don't say this critically, you know, we tend to try to go into these meetings of evaluation, right? Whether it's a vendor's, you know, client meeting, whether it's an interview between a candidate and a hiring manager, you know, whatever the about, you know, two businesses looking to merge, whatever the evaluation meeting is, we tend to go into these meetings a lot of times like seeking approval, which means we have to be perfect, or the illusion is we have to be perfect. And so we're hiding sort of the downsides of us, right? And completely accentuating the positive. And I find that if you diplomatically are vulnerable about what you struggle with while accentuating the positive, you're going to have a better match, you know? And I think a lot of people go about interviewing from this like subservient approval-seeking standpoint. And if they went into an interview, a vendor meeting, whatever the meeting is, from like a two business entities trying to see if this is a good match perspective, and they were both diplomatically vulnerable combined with outlining what they bring to the table as a strength, there would be better matches made and rejection wouldn't be so personal, you know, or feel so personal, because it just means it's not a good match. And I find that when clients are, you know, our clients are the candidate. So I find that when our clients can embrace this confidently and, you know, be diplomatically vulnerable in addition to everything else they already know how to do, then they have more fulfilling, you know, jobs.
And they stay in their placements for longer.
They stay in their place more for longer, or they start to see like the downsides of a company or something that just happens at every company. And this is a set of negatives that they can deal with. That set of negative may actually even allow them to shine. Right. So like,
exactly.
It just depends. Right. So mm-hmm. It's when an acknowledgement can be made about what the downside of each entity is, and then each entity decides if that's going to work for them. You know, I think it makes for a better match, you know.
Absolutely. So to bring this full circle.
Yeah.
What I'd love to hear from you is a story about when you know, we talked about Chloe and how mm-hmm. she just saw something in you. She just knew intuitively. Mm-hmm. Tell me about a time when you were able to do that for one of your clients. The kind of story where you kind of get choked up a little when you think about it.
Something that happened recently is, you know, I have, I can't even say she's one of our clients. She's a friend of mine who is amazing at what she does. And was finding frustration in interviewing as, you know, someone with, you know, 25-ish years of experience and feeling like she's getting, not getting the attention of, you know, mostly younger hiring managers, feeling like people aren't being as prepared for these meetings as she is. And it's hurting her, you know, and it's funny, as I tell this story, this is something that actually happens often with mm-hmm. senior level job seekers. So that's why my hesitation is trying to find like one that is different. But I have to tell you, this is a theme that happens often, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and it gets labeled as ageism and it gets labeled as all sorts of things, right? And it makes the interviews not so fun, and it makes you not want to go get more of them, right? Because mm-hmm. you're like, well, this sucked. I don't want to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting in this mental spiral, you know,
like bathing suit shopping.
There you go. It's exactly what it is. That's actually a great analogy. So trying to help people. So what I've tried to do, what I've done with her and others, is really get people to just take down the expectations of what these meetings should be, you know, and I say, like, you know, granted, the last thing you maybe want to do is think about the person who is employed interviewing you, what they're going through. I said, but without that empathy, even if it's not deserved, right, in your mind, because they're working and have a job and you don't, or you don't have the job you want, it's still going to hurt you if you don't have some empathy. I said, so, you know, so I try to get her, and what I've done in the past is get people to. It's like, you're amazing. But here's the thing. If you're going into these meetings with this high level of expectation that they need to have everything in order, and they don't, right? Maybe they just didn't have time to be prepared for the meeting. I'm not saying it's right, but it's just the reality. You know, maybe they, from working from home, they got like, you know, three kids are trying to juggle homeschool while they're doing their job at the same time, and they didn't have time to read everything about the job description in your background to have a great meeting foundation. Or, you know, or maybe they're just tired, right? Everybody's freaking tired right now, you know, even if you know, you don't need to have anybody home and you can just be tired. And I said, so maybe just go into it regardless of what it's supposed to be, just accept it for what it is. And maybe it's just a networking meeting. Maybe it's just a conversation. And this way you are able to, you know, they won't feel like they're disappointing you because you've clearly come to the meeting like completely prepared and on your game. And it, maybe they feel like they're,
maybe it's intimidating.
They're intimidated or they're not, you know, they feel bad that they're not on their game, or they don't want to disappoint you because they really don't know what this job is going to entail. And you clearly need some definition. And they're like, well, I don't have definition, so this isn't going to work. I said, so as a result, you're not having any control over the opportunity being offered to you or further discussed with you. And they're not seeing how awesome you are. So I said, just take it down a notch. I'm not telling you to dumb it down. I'm not telling you to, you know, be who you aren't or any of that. I'm just saying, take down the expectation of the meeting down a notch on these initial stages, just so you can have it more in your court that the opportunity gets evaluated with you. And then you get a chance to turn it down. You get a chance to keep going or whatever, or reframe it or whatever. I said, but you're not allowing yourself to be put in a position to be evaluated.
Right.
Because you're going into it so fast and so hard with like high expectations. And, you know, I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine about that. So I don't know her outcome yet, but I've had this conversation with a lot of senior level job seekers, and they've, you know, I think as senior level people, especially if we're put in a position where we all of a sudden now have to prove ourselves again when we felt like we've arrived,
mm-hmm.
you know, our instinct, especially I think, you know, our generation is to work harder, show more, do more, prove how much we are worth it. When in actuality, that's actually, I think, overwhelming people, and we need to step it back a little bit.
So what has been the result after you've given this guidance? I tell people, the way that you're describing it reminds me that I tell people to approach it with curiosity, which helps kind of level up that expectation. So I love what you're saying here. Do you remember a time when it did have the impact you wanted it to? When you heard back from
it has impacts pretty consistently. You know, we've had clients after, you know, struggling for months, you know, land something better than they ever thought. One of my more warm-hearted stories is a client who came at me, and I say came at me definitively, she came at me in April 2020. It was in the height of the pandemic. We both were living in hot spots. And, you know, I did a webinar, and, you know, after my webinar, I have my resume webinar, I have a series of emails that I send out selling a package that we offer that is not inexpensive. And, you know, she emailed me back with like a scathing commentary of, you know, how dare I, you know, try to sell this stuff in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, all this stuff. And I waited, it was a Saturday night when she emailed me, clearly nothing was going to happen that late on Saturday night that was going to be good. So I waited till the next day and emailed her and just said, look, you know, I have a business too. I'm trying to keep my people working. And, you know, I'm also in a hot spot. I'm also scared to death. And if you need an ear, let me know. And very long story short, she wound up hiring us like a month later and not thinking, you know, I was like the devil incarnate. And she's somebody that I said this to. I was like, you really just need one job. You got to just keep going out there and, you know, keep pitching what you do. Have conversations, you know, keep the expectation low of what the conversation should be. See where it is. Meet them where they are. You know, and not hold them to this, what they should be. And she wound up landing something that was great. She was able to bring her dog to work, you know, on the days that she did have to go in. She was home most of the time. Perks that she didn't think would happen. Like, and she really did not think she was employable in April. Mm. And she had already been out of work in April, like 3-4 months before the pandemic even happened. So the pandemic just sent her
through
over
the
edge, you know, and she was the breadwinner and, you know, the whole thing. So she was nervous. And, it, you know, people sometimes, I think, at a senior level don't necessarily need to be reminded that they're accomplished or amazing. I think most of us kind of know in some way or another, even if we have our imposter thing or some other insecurity. But I think we have to be reminded that we don't have to try so hard sometimes. We just need to listen instead of prove. And if we can take it back a few notches and meet people where they are, we're going to be more received. We're going to be received better, I think.
Well, it's
that's
just
a recent,
the same.
That's an example of that. So
I love that. And it's so important to share that kind of story too, because I think it's one thing to give them the advice and to say, hey, look, you got to approach it with lower expectations and, and meet people where they are. But then to hear the results of that, to hear that this, this kind of guidance, when it's applied and it's appropriate, it works. It really works. I mean, this woman got a great job that she didn't anticipate, and she went from feeling this big, I'm making fingers, you know, close together, to and unemployable as far as she was concerned, and angry and scared, to having a job that she is comfortable in and that she likes. So it's really important to bring that full circle and finish that story with that kind of success, because it's not unusual to have that success. It's not an unusual situation. It's not unusual to have that success. And I love that you say to meet people where they are, because just like we started this whole conversation with Chloe, just as much as we want to be seen and known, we also have to know that the people in front of us want to be seen and known. Right. Even if they're the one with the job, even if they're the hiring manager, they still have the same human need that we do to be seen and known. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if we can approach any of these interactions as, you know, most people in some capacity are struggling in this situation that we find ourselves in, right? I mean, you know, some more than others, clearly, and, you know, it's not a contest, you know, but definitely some have it worse than others. But even those that don't have a lot of, you know, measurable hardship are struggling, some of them, you know, and with the juggling and the, you know, the mental heaviness of what's going on in the world, even if their immediate life is blessedly fine. And I mean, everybody's got something. And I think if, you know, there's a degree of compassion that can come into any meeting, look, people want to hire people that are going to make their lives easier. And if you can come across like that, you're that person. And, you know, it's going to subliminally be, you know, something in your favor, right? So,
yes, that is something that could be said again.
Yeah.
people want their lives to be a little easier.
You know, and that doesn't mean the candidate, soon to be maybe employee, has to now take on and make their lives harder. But if you can make somebody's life easier without increasing any difficulty in your own life, therein lies a good match, right? So or the potential of a good match. And so that's where I think the empathy and the compassion and realizing that even the people who seemingly may have it better because they have the job, they're in the position of a decision maker, all that other stuff, doesn't mean that they don't have some things that they're dealing with too. And, you know, it's a decision, right? They don't want to pass on, if it's an HR person, they don't want to pass on a candidate that's going to eventually be a problem or a bad fit, right? If it's the hiring manager, you know, they don't want to have somebody hire somebody that they have to constantly look over their work, you know, and it creates double the amount of work. And I'm just coming up with examples, right? And Lord knows there's a list of things that the candidate's looking for that they don't have to deal with a crappy boss or
micromanaging and clock watching.
So it's both, right? But but if everybody can try to at least have an outward goal of meeting somebody where they are, I think there would be more potential better matches out there.
And that is a perfect way to wrap up this conversation.
Awesome.
Lisa, that was so thoughtful. And I really appreciate your stories, especially learning about Chloe and then again, bringing it back full circle to understand how you've guided, especially senior level executives, people in their 50s and older that are just, you know, in a place where they want more or they want different, or
they were let go because of COVID or other strange economic reasons.
Right.
I think your stories inspire, motivate, and keep people remembering that it's not always about them. So
yeah, not about them. It's not always about them.
Exactly. Exactly. So thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me. I am really looking forward to future conversations with you.
Same
and
here.
For our listeners, what is the best way to reach you, to connect with you, to ask you more questions, or just to follow up and see what kind of content you share?
Sure. My email address is lr@chameleonresumes.com. And my website is chameleonresumes.com. And we have, if you go to that website, we have an area you can sign up. I send a daily email to my list with career tips and stories and tips and announcing our webinars and all kinds of things. So if someone wanted to join our mailing list tribe, that'd be great.
Excellent. And for our listeners, in case you're on the road or out running or doing something where you don't have paper and pen or can't take a note, I will have those links and that information on the blog post associated with this podcast on elkinsconsulting.com. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Are you ready to start your story portfolio so you have the right story ready to share when the opportunity presents itself? When you're ready to get started, my book, Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will, is available in all the regular places, and the audiobook version is available on Google Play and on my website, elkinsconsulting.com. As a special bonus for listeners, the audiobook includes two songs recorded by my band, Spare Change, in my living room in Montana. Also on my website is a free podcast interview checklist. It's available to download to make sure you make the most out of your next podcast interview. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to rate the podcast and leave a review and let me know that you've done it so I can thank you properly. Thank you.
Now listen to me, honey, while I say, how could you tell me?